sound. Should it be Francisco and JJ or JJ and Francisco? We can. That was actually debated.
Really?
Of course that was debated.
I think you debated that yourself.
No, we discussed it.
I remember debating.
Yeah, we did. We 100% really? Did. We were like, what looks, what? How does it look better?
All right.
Yeah.
You generally don't remember this conversation?
No, not at all.
Well, that's hilarious. Been a while. It's been 70 episodes.
Well, bro, there's people that...
We good?
All right.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Hey, save it for the pod.
Now, everything that you've been saving. Here we go.
We got Paul Ellie, everybody. We have welcome to the Standby Podcast with JJ and Francisco, which originally is going to be Francisco and JJ, but JJ wants his name first.
It's all my fault.
Yeah. But welcome. We have a great guest. It's a good friend of ours. It's Paul Ellie. I should have asked any... You know,
my name is Paul.
Credits. No, anything that you want me to tell you about so people know. I mean, now you have to just present yourself.
Oh, yeah, that's
introduce
true.
Introduce yourself. So if you want to, you know.
Yeah, what's up, y'all?
He's the
creator.
Yeah, there we go.
Creator of the low key comedy show. I was going to say network, but not show.
Yeah.
So, yeah, which is a great show that you've been doing that for what? How long? Like,
It went through a bunch of evolutions, but we started back in like pre-pandemic.
Oh,
like,
so it wasn't the, I thought it was during the pandemic, because I know you were doing it like in the back of a truck.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So like the whole point is that he does the show, and when the cops come, they just drive away, right?
Basically, yeah. We drive off with the stage.
No, because the stage is a pickup truck.
Oh, really?
Or it started as that, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah, before we did it at the Comedy Store, the show was called Low Key Upset. So I created the show with myself and Matt Reif.
Mm-hmm.
So we did the show at the Comedy Store, and then we did it for a year, and when the pandemic happened... and everything got shut down. I think it was like March when everything like got shut down. And then it was in July.
Yeah, it was St. Patrick's Day, wasn't it?
Was it St. Patrick's Day when everything shut down?
Right around St. Patrick's Day.
Thank God.
Right there.
Thank God, man. Yeah, I think COVID came from St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah, right. It all started from that. And it got really bad during Cinco de Mayo.
Well, think about it. St. Patrick is green and all the pictures of COVID are green.
Oh,
every COVID
wow.
headshot has been green.
Have we got room for this conspiracy theory?
Like the picture of COVID, like you know,
like the virus.
Yeah, the virus.
Gross,
you ever seen the virus picture?
Oh man, no. There's no name.
No, a picture.
I mean, there's like you're talking about like Ghostbusters, like that.
No,
the green glove thing.
Haven't you seen the picture of what it looks like?
You never seen the picture of the COVID molecule?
No,
I've seen a couple variations. You've seen the green one, right?
Yeah. There's also an emoji. Of it.
Yeah, there's an emoji, bro. Type in COVID and a COVID emoji pops up. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, bro.
Wait, does COVID have more followers than
that? Yeah, oh, well,
obviously.
Yeah.
That COVID's doing really well.
People are dying
to join
that club.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
There you go.
Oh, so which...
You're seeing this for the first time.
I mean,
you've never seen COVID.
Well,
COVID meet Francisco.
Now you believe it's real.
But which there's a lot of them.
Yeah, so there's a lot of different colors, but the one I'm talking about. So first they came out with the very first one was green, and then they came out with this new one.
You know, they're like iPhones.
Yeah. This is like the COVID 7.
I mean, this looks like when you just go snorkeling.
Yeah, that you looks like algae.
It's just no, like right. like the corals and
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, yeah. You, know, you like... do snorkel in dirty ass water. I gotta be honest.
No, that, what are you talking about? That's when in Venezuela actually great snorkeling.
Oh yeah. Bro, I want to go. I can't wait.
Yeah. Oh yeah. He's got a Venezuelan girlfriend. So he keeps texting me all the time about like
for tips.
Hey, she's saying How this. She's yeah. saying this, and I'm like,
he well. Goes he, and then Francisco's like, just say Vaina.
Vaina, yes. Vaina means a lot. This is good news. I didn't know that. So you were saying about the COVID?
Oh, yeah. So, and then when COVID, basically it was like all the shows were canceled. There were no shows.
Yeah.
So we just decided to repurpose the show. And it was called Low Key Upset. And we're like, let's just call it Low Key Outside.
Got it.
Nice. And let's just be outside. So we did it outdoors for a while. And then now that we're back inside, we changed it to Low Key Comedy Show.
And I'm dying to ask you though. So you performed on this truck.
Yeah.
And then cops come. And
no, that was a lie.
It was a lie. Oh, I thought
joking.
It was a thing because I was about to go. Did you have to call the cops?
This whole thing's a lie.
Yeah. It's a lie. He's never even.
I'm not even here. I'm actually
COVID.
He's not here. COVID doesn't exist.
Yeah. Well, yeah, man. I mean, actually, the truth is the cops, the very first time we did the show, the cops did come.
Yeah. Right.
But so we basically set up the show. We got the chairs.
Where was this?
We did in the back of Matt's apartment building.
Okay.
So Matt was living in North Hollywood at the time. Okay. And we essentially talked to all of Matt's neighbors And we were like, hey, we want to put on a show. Is it cool? And they all said no. So I was like, what if I talk to them? He goes, you could talk to them. So I talked to them. And then they're like, absolutely not.
And that still wasn't a deterrent for a comedian.
Dude. And then
why did you think that you were going to actually turn them?
Because I had money.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I had money in my pocket.
Oh, you were going to bribe them.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
And they took it.
Oh, so then...
They took it and still said no.
No, they said yeah. That's weird. They end up saying yes. Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
that'd be
God.
So fucked that he's taken. They're like, now get out of here.
Yeah. They just bully
quite
you.
The building you got there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. A bunch of mob squad there.
Straight up, bro. I felt like a mob dealer. I was
really?
Just going through and I was... The people who had pushback was like, there was this couple that didn't want the show. And then there was this other Russian woman who was living in Matt's building. She mm-hmm. didn't want us to do the show. And also, she didn't want, we had basically rent her parking spot.
Yeah.
Because in the back of Matt's apartment building, there were some parking spaces. And we basically had to pay people to use their parking spot.
Right.
So people were like, I'm not going to just park on the street. You're not going to take my spot. And I'm like, I'll give you $50 for 4 hours.
Yeah.
And then they all said yes. And then the show, we lost money like doing the show. We were just constantly losing
money.
This
is how hard it is to run a gig in Los Angeles. You have to pay people to stay away.
Dude, yeah.
And doing it in a parking lot of somebody's house.
Yeah. And then it was just like, you know, then the comics were coming by and like some of them were graciously like, bro, just keep the money. We don't need it. But we paid them. We're like, yeah, here's $100.
Mm-hmm. Oh, right. So it was good payment. I mean, per LA standards.
Per LA standards, yeah, bro. I mean, bro, I did a show where the guy gave me an envelope and in the envelope was $10.
Oh.
And I'm like,
the envelope was more expensive than the dollar.
Yeah. I'm like, why are you putting this in an envelope? I had someone give me a thank you card.
Was it sealed?
Sealed, bro.
Oh,
sealed.
Man.
And then I ripped this. It's like, fucking, don't pay me.
I got an empty envelope recently in Britain on my British tour. I got an empty envelope. They didn't know. Luckily, I opened it up at the gig once the promoter gave it to me. And I was like, thanks. Open it up. I was like, hey, there's nothing in. Oh, it was at the Edinburgh Festival. I was like, hey, there's nothing in here. And they were like, oh, shit. And they had to rectify it and go find the money.
They just gave you
somehow.
They just gave you paper.
Somehow they failed to put my money in the envelope.
Failed. They got lucky. Or you got lucky that you opened it.
That I did it in front of them.
Yeah, because then they would be like, no, there was money in there.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, how can you prove it?
They're trying
maybe
it
that's
with
the
everybody.
Thing about the envelope, because people don't open it.
Oh, shit. Yeah. I open all the envelopes, bro. Yeah. I open them right there.
Yeah.
In front of the mailman. I don't give a fuck. And I stare at him.
With eye contact. Yeah. That's what I was going to say.
I open other people's envelopes. I don't give a shit.
Yeah.
I was like, where's my money? I just. I'm like, what are you talking about?
Do you still get mail from other people's at your address? Like the previous?
Yeah. Sometimes here and there, I guess. Yeah. I'm like, and I always write, hey, that this person doesn't live here. You know what I mean?
Dude, I've got something even weirder happening recently because I'm starting to get a new name. Like I haven't. There's two people who I've been getting mail for. I've been there for 5 years. I've been getting mail, but I got a new name that's been popping up. How does a new name come into the rotation?
That is true. Yeah.
So I'm like, somebody's scamming. You know, at least it's not my name. But
Yeah. Are you doing shows in your apartment?
Dude, I got in trouble because I got this letter and it said time sensitive.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't under my name.
And then you opened it.
I opened it.
Yeah.
And then I went to the landlord and I was like, hey, I got this letter in the mail. But he saw that it was opened. And then he was like, why'd you open it?
Yeah.
And I was like, it was time sensitive. I just want to see what it was.
But you didn't see their name?
that was the reasoning you used? Why didn't you just go, I didn't read the name, I just opened it? But you're like, it said time sensitive. I thought maybe I'd help somebody out.
No, because honestly, I thought it was like, what if it was some like court case this day? And then I'm like, oh, shit,
but
so let them know.
That's a lot of marketing, too. You know, they do that. Time sensitive is bullshit.
Yeah, it's time sensitive, and it's like time sensitive because this deal won't last long. 10% APR off your first 10 purchases.
So you got in trouble for that?
No, he was just like confused, and he was like, he was like, yeah, I just don't.
And then he was like, dude, you still owe me $50 for your show.
Exactly. I had to pay you.
And then he's like, you know what's time sensitive? Fucking pay me.
Dude, that was a gnarly time, man. Like doing those shows, but I'll tell you this, bro, it was the most fulfilled I think I ever felt in Los Angeles.
Really?
Yeah.
Why? Because you felt like you were giving something to the
Because it was such the uphill battle of getting the show going in the first place and then actually pulling it off?
Man, it was a mixture of like a bunch of things, right? It was a mixture of that. It was a mixture of that. And it was just a mixture of just like like when we did the show and like we had Bill Burr come and do the show, and mm-hmm. then I'm just like, holy fuck, bro. Like Bill Burr's doing stand up on a pickup truck.
Yeah.
And like, and I didn't even want to really make it about me. And I felt like for a while I would. Because there's a lot
but
of.
But I remember that you posted on your Instagram and like, hey, Bill Burr came to the show because of me.
Like, yeah. I made sure to let everyone know. But it was just like, I think a lot of times, especially in LA, like with the. What the city breeds is like, it just convinces us that it's like, we need to make it and we need to do this. And it's a lot of like, we. And then like, and it was genuinely coming from a place of just like, I just want to do a show.
Right.
Like, I don't care about me more than the show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I care about the show, except like, it wasn't about you trying to do the show just so you can get something else.
Yeah. And also, you're doing something for people because entertainment was just dead, wasn't it, for all that period? So, putting on something, putting smiles on people's faces, actually, you're right. It felt more rewarding in that period when you do pull it off.
Yeah, man.
Happy because.
So, whose pickup was it?
We rented a few. Like, we.
Oh, so it wasn't. You just kept. Why did you decide on a pickup?
I saw Michael Che did a show in New York.
Okay.
And he did an outdoor show on a pickup truck.
Uh-huh.
So he did it, I believe, twice, and then he didn't do the show again. And then Matt and I were like, well, if we need a stage, instead of buying a stage, let's just use a truck.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And so we found a I think the first show we did, we rented a U-Haul truck.
Yeah. So but a pickup or the ones that's like vroom, they open.
No,
up?
The pickup.
Oh, got it.
Yeah, we did the pickup. Yeah. So we just felt like and then we started to realize like, dude, this is just a traveling comedy club.
Yeah.
You know, and then we did it in Eagle Rock, then we did it in Mid City, and then like there were some shows we did where we had 300 people. You know, like we were getting like big crowds to come by and
that's great.
So who was driving this truck? I just care more about the truck than the show.
Yeah. I think you're a car salesman.
Truck.
Yeah, I never seen someone more interested. Yeah, what's the VIN number of the stage?
Dude, no, that's pretty cool. I mean, I remember seeing the shows, never did them, but I
you did do, yeah.
No.
I mean, it was
just slip that in there. And
hey, I'm just saying, we've been honest here, right?
Well, bro, we're gonna do more, and I'd love to have both you gentlemen.
Yeah, and especially since you're a truck guy.
Yeah,
I didn't realize you're such a truck guy.
I'm a truck guy, and I never got invited
this whole time.
Yeah. I'm a monster truck guy.
That's true. Out of curiosity, then, did you have the thought of maybe keeping the shows going? You know, once the pandemic ended or anything, but
we wanted
to get back indoors.
We still keep them going.
The shows.
The outdoor truck ones.
Yeah, but we don't do them that much, man. Like we do them maybe once every 3 months. Like we got our next one October 11th, so we have that one coming up, and then that's the last one of the year.
Right.
And then it's just, man. Also, it became a full time job. It's like I'm promoting the show, and I was doing a lot of the work. It's like I was doing the marketing, I was doing the promoting. And then I was booking the show.
Now we're going to bring Matt Rife to see. Because somebody's doing all the work. This is what the show is about, basically. It's like Jerry Springer. We just.
And then Matt shows up. And then we fight.
Yeah.
And then what's his name? Steve. Remember the security guard Steve?
Oh, yeah.
And then he got his own show?
He had his own show.
And then he had his own show, Steve.
He has his own show?
He had his own show, yeah.
And what was. So he was talking? Like, what was he doing?
It was very Springer-esque, wasn't it?
So he started off as basically he was a stuntman, basically on the show of Jerry Springer show. He would stop the fight.
Yeah.
And then he started to get a microphone after like 10 seasons. They gave him a mic where he could talk.
He started to become quite the celebrity, didn't he? Like, they would all chant his name.
Yeah, they would chant his name.
As the fight was heating up, they're like, here comes Steve.
Wow. Yeah, because they knew that he didn't fuck around and he would like yell at people. Like, I think he yelled at someone legit, like one of the. I'm going to call them contestants. He legit yelled at one of them. Yeah. And then everyone was like chanting his name. And then that became like a thing.
Uh-huh.
And so the network is like, yo, Jerry is going to die soon. So let's just give Steve his own show. Then Steve had his own show. And also Steve is like there the whole time. He gets the format. Yeah. He knows the thing. Yeah, he knows which questions to ask. But also I was going to say, my aunt and uncles used to love Jerry Springer.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they came from Iraq. So when they would watch the show, in their minds, they're like, this is... what's outside of our doors.
This is America.
This is America.
This is 90% of America.
It's just a bunch of people like, I have something to tell you. I'm fucking your dad.
That's what they thought it was.
Yeah, they're like, that's America.
Well,
so the thing is,
they're kind of.
Which is, they're not far off.
Did they still think it was a better life?
Yeah, I mean, they were just like.
Oh, because they were over there, not here. They're at Iraq.
Well, when they came to America, they're like, you know, they're also like within their bubble. Like a lot of immigrants, when they come out here, they're like, "Yo,
yeah,
I don't
stick in there, and they don't go out.
They don't
of the bubble, which is crazy to me. I mean, because I always say, like, I feel like when you move to, it's fine if you want to keep your roots. I get that, but I think once you move to any country, you should also live in that like in the culture of that country, and you know, not just be in a bubble. Venezuelan people do it, you know, a lot of people do.
Every culture does it.
I mean, every culture
every
does
culture
it.
Culture has a whole cul-de-sac somewhere.
Yeah.
Well, what's your culture, JJ?
Well, I'm Canadian
and white,
but there's I'm white. I don't know if you noticed.
I thought you were like Russian or something.
Oh, I could. If only I was something else. Yeah. You know, I've done the heritage test thing, and it's
what does it say?
99% Irish.
Oh, 99%. Holy shit!
Yeah, it was pretty high, and then a little bit Swedish, and then a little bit something else. But I'm white as all get out.
Dude, I know this girl who did one of those heritage tests, and she found out she was, I think, 8% Hispanic. And she is acting 100% Hispanic now.
Oh, one of those. It's like her name was Jasmine. It's like Jasmine.
Yeah, like, straight up. Yeah, and all she talks about, like, she just shits on white people. Like she's like, oh yeah, like a white guy. Yeah. And then she even says it like this. She goes, yeah, you know, well, the thing is, like, when I found out I was Latina.
She's the Rachel Dolezal of Latina.
I always say when see people when they go like that, they're like because obviously I have an accent, you know, but like some people they have like the, you know, American accent, and then all of a sudden it's like, yeah, because like I went to Taco Bell, you know. Or I'm like, all right, you don't need to like pronounce, like just say if you're speaking in American, just you don't need to pronounce the Latino, you know. But like, they love to do it too. But it's not even to show off. That I'm like, hey, I know a little bit of, you know, what I was like, nah, you're not, you know, because also for me, it's like if you're speaking the American, you pronounce like with American accent, you know, speaking Spanish, you know what I mean? Whatever.
But it's never the other way around. Like, I never heard a Spanish speaker like,
you know, the other day I had a hamburger. And I,
no one tries to. But also it's like, she has so much hate and like so much like resentment and like she keeps saying white people.
But why I think some people sometimes they wanna have something else to show, you know, like to be like instead of just being you know, they wanna add something. Like for example, if she found 8%, she's like, well, now I can say that
now
I'm Latina.
Now I have a uniqueness.
I have something more than you. And it's kind of like, no, just be you. Like, it doesn't, that's enough. I mean, yourself is really enough that you're not, you know, you don't, you know, you're very different from everybody else. But I feel so a lot of people sometimes want to add that extra thing just to say they, I don't know.
Yeah. And also, like, you know, also in LA, like acting and like the entertainment industry, people want to be like, yo, I am something else, because they're like, oh, minorities are getting work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So people are like, fuck my identity.
Unique selling point. Your USB, you make up something so that you're like, stand out.
Yeah.
Makes you more exclusive.
Yeah, I mean, it's like those like those white guys that wear dreads. That's so fucking. I know, because he wore dreads.
You wore dreads? Yeah. You were a white guy with dreads?
I did. I was a white guy with dreads about 15 years ago.
I don't think there's ever been a white guy with dreads that's like a CEO of anything.
hey, CEO of a party town.
Americans have a very different attitude towards the dreads than other cultures do, though.
Why? So, what do you mean?
Like, actually, if you even look at American culture in the 90s, if you look at bands like Alice in Chains and Soundgarden and Blind Melon, like, those guys all were white guys with dreads.
True.
And I came a lot, like, I came up
Papa
in the
Roach
90s.
Papa Roach had dreads
then,
too, right?
Yeah, Papa Roach.
I don't know. I wasn't a Papa Roach guy, but yeah, there was dreads everywhere. And then, and I lived in Britain. I don't have to justify this. I know that he thinks
no,
it's
no, it's cool, man. But it was a but Dredge is a choice.
No, yeah, it was yeah. It was
and you wanted to choice. Do it. It was dope.
But you didn't do it to be like because you wanted to be like
reggae, no,
like you didn't want to be white or whatever. Like
it was, no, it had nothing.
It was just like the style.
I've never lived in a culture where I had to think that way. I think that's American, more of an American way of thinking. Yeah, it's yeah, like yeah, this exactly. defines this exactly. culture, yeah, and we yeah, are yeah. Like I've never having lived in America now for 5 years. I don't mean you guys, but I just mean Americans are really hung up on dividing people by race and what belongs here and there.
It is.
Whereas even living in Britain, they don't really.
You're just British.
Yeah, you're just British. In fact, I remember we were talking about this. I was at a British wedding last weekend, and Patrice O'Neill, when he worked over in London, I was said he even said that he was disappointed in London because he was no longer black.
Mm-hmm.
He was like, "I'm not black anymore. I'm American now."
Yeah,
and I'm like, "Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
That's the way other cultures." See
yeah,
things,
here is but. Very like. I mean, that happened to me when I first moved here. You know, like I was like, I basically realized I was something else after I moved here because in Venezuela I was just like Venezuelan.
Yeah,
like, and over there, like there's. Yeah. You know, like there's a lot of like Spanish, Italian influence, but nobody's go like I'm Italian or I'm Spanish. No, you're just Venezuelan. You know what I mean?
Right.
But here's like I'm Italian, I'm Irish, and I'm on this, I'm all this stuff. It's like, and even when you fill out an application, they tell you. I mean, like you gotta, like who, like what race are you, what ethnicity are you? It's like,
and they don't give you a lot of options.
Yeah.
They really don't. Like it's like Latino.
Yeah.
And right. It's like, that is like, encompasses everything.
Well, it's Hispanic, Latino, whatever. Yeah. Which is, even that's another thing too. Like the whole thing about here, like even being like white here means something else than just the skin color. Because like for example, like my mom is white. Like she's the same skin as you. You know what I mean? Like but here she's a woman of color, which is so interesting because it's like, but here white also means like a culture. You know what I mean? Like it's not just, you're just the color white, but like, because again, my mom is white, but like here she's not white.
Right.
Well, you know, she's Latina.
But that's why it's so hard to define people like that way. It's such an American way.
That's what I mean.
Being Canadian and I've got my own unique life experiences, which are very different than some white guy who's going to come from Alabama.
You can't
stand the two of us together and go.
Exactly.
But in America, sometimes that does happen.
Yeah. You know,
these white guys.
Yeah. No, I was talking to a buddy of mine. He said something really interesting. He was like, well, first of all, like white is not a race.
Right.
Irish is a race.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Swedish is a race. Mm-hmm. German is a race. Like being like, I am white. It's like, it's actually something that we made up.
Yeah.
It's like a made up thing to be like, to encompass all the European, basically the pigment, like then pigment became race.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like the foundation of it in general. It's like, you are black, you are brown, you are white. And it's like based on colors. And it's like, now it's like, it's starting to, we're doing a good job of trying to reinvent that. In a lot of ways, you know, and it's like, I'm actually, no, I'm not bent, but people are always going to be like white. Like we're too deep. We've lived this way for too long.
Because even here, like when you joke, I mean, even like with comedy, you know, white people do this. Like when people say that as a stand up in the American culture, you know, which white people you're talking about.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But you're not you're not thinking about like the Irish or the Norwegian person that just moved here. No, you're talking about somebody that's like, you know what I mean? So that's why it's like, even saying that is like a type of culture. Cause you're talking about the suburb country club people. I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, I don't even know what it would be, but that's kind of like,
even there, there's many layers.
There's many. Yeah. So it's kind of like, even that for me, when I moved here, I was like, I was weirded out because I was like, what do I call my mom? I mean, I don't.
Yeah.
Because like, she's there. I just see the skin color and that's it, you know. But that was never even a thing over there, you know. But
yeah. Oh, yeah. That's what I was going to say. It was at this British wedding. We were talking about these things. And because Britain does have its hangups and Europe, because it's the class system.
Yes.
So there are a lot
in the world, it's about class. Yeah.
And here in America, there isn't a class system, but they've figured out another way to categorize people.
Yeah. Exactly. And then, you were born in Detroit, right?
Yeah. Like my parents are Assyrian from Iraq.
Okay.
So my parents are Chaldean Assyrian. Chaldeans are Catholic Assyrians from Iraq.
Catholics, okay. Assyrians from Iraq.
Yeah. So my parents are Iraqi. I was born in America and I don't really speak Arabic. And my name is Paul. So it's like basically I'm white.
You've
been Americanized.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're American.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you're American.
From Detroit. Yeah, like no one ever looks at me and assumes, like, people always assumed I was Italian. Like,
yeah, you
including
yeah,
right. me. For okay. many years.
Really?
Yeah.
You had your doubts.
You like, thought, yeah, like, I just thought... You look yourself in the mirror and you go like, hey.
I just thought I was whatever Christopher from The Sopranos was.
You do look right. like
I was like, I'm that guy's race.
That's right. Yeah, yeah.
You know, like, and I feel
Paulie
like...
Paulie Walnuts.
Which one was Paulie Walnuts again?
He was the guy with the
Oh, with the white. With the yeah, yeah, yeah. He died, bro.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Damn, bro.
Yeah.
A lot of The Sopranos. Tony Soprano has died. Paulie Walnuts has died.
That's
I think two others died.
Oh, they
Sopranos
they,
cast.
Yeah. One of the yeah, but so yeah, you thought you were
not
Italian.
By gun violence, but
well, I just never like my parents wanted me to be American.
Yeah.
So that's the thing because also like, they came here. That's different yeah. from me cuz like my parents we came here cuz what how old were you? How old were they when they moved here? Like young?
Let's see. My dad was born in 48 and he came here in the 80s. Mm-hmm. So he was like 33, 32. My mom came when she was like 19, 20.
Mm.
So they were relatively younger.
Yeah. So and, I get that to be like that because when I moved here, my parents were like, it was never a talk about like, we're going to speak, you're going to be American. Nah, like we spoke Spanish all the time, you know, it was never a thing of like, that for me to like,
oh really?
Yeah, I was
just
never
get in the culture.
No.
Even
I mean,
though,
look
even
at,
though you are the first.
Me.
Yeah, exactly. You need headphones. That's what you're missing.
Exactly. Well, that's what's right. So
podcast
if you're
ain't got no headphones.
So if you're first generation American, your parents, they still have family back home, correct?
Yeah.
Have you gone home to visit them? And are you not necessarily outcasted, but are they more? They consider you an American more than. You
of
know,
course.
Part of
yeah. Yeah, it's really sad, honestly. Like, I want to be who I am, you know?
And but
like,
it's not sad because that's who you are.
Well, I feel like there's this whole part of me that is missing, you know, of like mm-hmm. where my blood is from and where my DNA flows from, you know? So, and I just want, like, I want to go to Iraq and I want to, like, see where my parents grew up. And, you know, I want to be able to speak Arabic better, which is, you know, doing what I can to, like, learn the language mm-hmm. and learn about my history. And, like, because
yeah.
I just don't want to be the comic who, like, talks about Iraq and having immigrant parents.
But
and
you
got
have
shit.
No idea. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And then
like, you're just making, like, bullshit. You're using it to score points with the crowd. But, like, did you really go there or whatever?
Yeah, and it's like, then how am I different right. than the 8%
of course, yeah,
woman?
Yeah.
I'm doing the same thing.
Yeah.
Right.
And it's like, I don't want to do that. That's why it's like authenticity was like,
that's true.
So important to me. And I think that's something I really make evident in like my stand up is like, I'm going to say the truth and only speak from what I know. So mm-hmm. it's like, all right, cool. If I'm going to talk about this, then I got to just be honest and be like, bro, I've never had to experience the hate my friends experience. Like I have Arab friends that experienced a bunch of shit
mm-hmm.
growing up as kids, the way they looked, you know, how thick their eyebrows were and like people mm-hmm. making fun of them, right. the way they looked. And me, people would be like, am I right? You know what I mean? Right. And then I'd be like, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, like I've been in cars where like people are like my friend's dads were like, I'm in a car with a bunch of like a white family. And like my friend's dads are like just being racist as fuck,
mm-hmm.
saying shit about Arabs in front of me.
And they don't,
right.
yeah.
And I wouldn't say shit. In my mind, I'm like, man, this guy's my ride.
Yeah.
God, you're like
he's
an under
my ride or die.
You're like an undercover cop. You're like an undercover race,
bro. Straight up, that's a great show.
You can undercover race.
Undercover race. Yeah. It'd be like punked for like catching racist people.
Yeah. And then you're like, well, look who we are.
And it's just me. Yeah, man.
Hey, let's pitch it.
Because I see that more since I've moved to America as well. There are more, like, there's people on stage all the time who I think are white or whatever, and then they go, because I'm Latina. And I'm like, I can't tell, but I'm just not used to it.
That same girl, that's 8%. We had, like, we all hung out, all of us. We did a show, then we went to a bar, and, like, she
By the way, her
there.
Name is 8%.
So I was just calling it 8%. So 8%, we're at a bar. And then we all got some drinks. And she goes, okay, everyone, salute.
Oh, no.
And then we all started to, like, cheers. And then she goes, did everyone salute?
Oh,
she's, like, trying to, like, get everyone. I'm like, shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
Trying too hard.
It's trying too hard. It's what people that try too hard to be, yeah. like, It's like, just be you, man. Just be who you are. Yeah.
Bro, it's a costume.
Yeah.
She basically found this new costume.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I was like, I'm just going to wear this.
Yeah, yeah. Until something else becomes popular, and then I'll wear something else kind of thing.
Bro, I'd have so much more respect if she's like, hey, I don't know what I want to be.
I have no idea.
Like,
yes.
Yeah. And right. I'm just going to do the closest thing that is popping. I'm just going
to
be that.
Yeah.
It's like, just
to me,
that.
That's more respectful when people, yes, when like, just tell the truth. Because we know what you're, because what's funny is like, a lot of times when people do stuff like that, you know, like it's obvious and everybody sees it. So it's kind of like you're not fooling anybody. You know what I mean? So it's like it's actually better to be like, yeah, I do this because I want to get it. You know,
I don't even more respect. I don't even like it when Canadians and Americans call themselves Irish, when even if they're from my father who never lived in Ireland
or
anything,
like your father.
But still calls himself Irish. And I'm always like, Dad, you're not. Dad, you're Canadian. You're Canadian. Yeah, but he's like, because when I'm in Ireland or I call him, he's like, don't forget that you're Irish. And I'm like, I don't feel that way, Dad. I feel that I'm Canadian, you know, but a lot of the older generation, the boomers, they love having that identity. And you go through Boston and you can ask
but
people,
I mean,
like,
I guess,
I'm Irish.
But
have
some
you ever
of them,
been?
At least,
and they've never been.
Even like, yeah. So I don't. But then I was going to ask you, so then you grew up in Detroit.
Yeah.
And then when did you first move to, did you always want to do comedy or is that a thing? Or like, did
no.
you? Oh.
No, honestly, growing up, I wanted to be a criminal.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
A criminal?
Detroit, man. It's Detroit.
A criminal?
Yeah.
But like, what? Like,
what kind of entry-level kind of crimes like, were you doing?
I was stealing a lot as a kid.
Really?
Yeah, I was stealing a lot.
But
I was
like shoplifting?
Like, give me your fucking money or like, yeah, shoplifting.
No, like shoplifting and like.
Like what, like candy and stuff?
Yeah, candy. I steal candy a lot, clothes, toys.
Wow.
Just anything I get my hands
on. What
was
your style? Did you go in with bags in your pants, with the bags of the store in your pants, and then take the bags out and put the stuff in the bags?
Honestly, bro, I had the worst strategy.
Oh, were you just blunt?
What was it?
I would go and I would take something and put it in my pocket, and then I would grab something and then buy another item.
Okay.
Just to let them know that I'm like, why would I steal something if I'm willing to pay for this?
Yeah, I was just being absent-minded for a second.
So then I have an out if they catch me.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and then that was early on, man. Like, early on, I grew up in, like, a really rough neighborhood, and, like, it was...
Were you, like, did you belong to a gang?
I tried to join a gang, actually.
Oh, wow, really?
Yeah, I tried to join a gang, and honestly, bro, 100% true, they didn't let me join because I had allergies.
What?
Dude, I had severe allergies.
It's so funny, you had to fill out forms to join the gang. Please tick the box that applies to you.
So you were like, hey, guys, I'm... I just really want to be. It's like, get the fuck out. You know?
No, because I remember I asked them, like, because it was this gang. It was called the Southfield Players.
Southfield Players? That sounds more like a musical.
Yeah.
Hey, everybody.
Yeah, it was like West Side Story, but in Detroit. Yeah, man. I was.
So, like, what happened? You were like, they told you, like, you wanted to join the gang, and then what did they say?
Yeah, I wanted to join the gang, and, like, I was talking to, they're like young kids, and, like, the gang, like, what we do is we would fight people, and we would basically jump people. So basically, it's like, there's someone that someone in the crew doesn't like.
Yeah.
They're like, let's follow them home and let's fight them.
Oh, wow.
Right? And then if there's,
wait, how,
like,
old is this? By what age?
I was 7th grade.
Okay, so like 12, 13.
12, 13, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
12, 13, yeah. So then
we bunch of punks.
Oh, bro, we were some punks.
Yeah.
But we didn't, you know what I mean? We were all broke.
Yeah, this is like, it just reminded me of that movie. What was that movie, Robert De Niro, and that he drives a bus?
Oh, Bronx Tale.
Bronx Tale. This is, it's like those kids.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Like right. that. And then,
like
it,
that, yeah.
And then, you know, in over the years, it's like, you know, a lot of those kids, you know, a lot of them are in jail now.
Yeah, because they grew up to be professional criminals.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That's how you start, no? That's literally how, I mean, like...
You gotta start somewhere.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah, you start open micing it.
So, like, but then what happened when...
It's
about
your amateur
allergy,
status.
I wanted to, then... Like, how did they tell you? Like, what was the thing?
So one of the guys, like, I always had severe allergy attacks constantly.
Okay.
So they would like sort of flare up out
of
nowhere sometimes. Just a pollen season, I would just constantly sneeze.
Maybe you're just allergic to fear, to crime.
Potentially, bro.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But they were allergic to just bitch-ass motherfuckers like myself.
It's amazing if you were a great fighter and you could be a great gang member. You got knife skills and everything, but a flower can take you down.
Oh, take me down. Straight up, yeah. Because like I remember I asked one of the kids who was my friend. I was like, hey, man, can you ask if I can join the gang? And he was like, bro, I'll ask. So then he asked this dude. This kid was like, yo, Paul's trying to join the gang. And the guy's like, nah, man, the motherfucker be sneezing too. And then he came back up to me and he goes, hey, man, Arby. His name was Arby.
Arby? The, like, Arby. The, like the burger?
Yeah, but I think he spelled it just R and B.
Oh, R. Okay.
Arby was like, yeah, bro. So he was like, yeah, man, Arby said that you sneeze too much. And then I was like, fuck. So then I'm just
You're
like,
useless in May.
But you know what? Actually, allergies save your life.
Straight up, bro.
Because if you were to join the gang, you would probably be in jail now. Bro, sneezing your ass
I need to thank Pollen.
Yeah.
For keeping me out of jail.
Yeah. That was
or
it.
He could be the king of Detroit.
No, dude. No, no man. All the guys are in jail, he said.
Yeah, man. But like, I was going to go to law school. I mean, like, obviously, it's like this younger part of me.
Wait,
like,
what happened? Whoa.
I know this.
I'm just jumping.
Wait, what movie is this? It's a little fucking.
I went from the other side of the law. But I went from being a criminal to wanting to be a lawyer.
Like, how did you
criminals.
How do you go from stealing clothes, wanting to join a gang? Well, and then wanting to be a lawyer. Like, what the fuck? Like, what happened?
He's got many dreams,
man. What changed?
I had an uncle who got in a lot of trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And
I know. Is Sneeze McGee?
Sneeze McGee? Who's Sneeze McGee?
Sneeze McGee.
Sneeze McGee? Sneeze McGee?
That's your uncle.
Hilarious. Bro, this guy had no allergies. He just fucking, the guy was just bad, bro.
Badass.
So he got in trouble and then you saw that and you're like, I don't want to do this.
Man, honestly, bro, I think things really took a turn when like, because I eventually was joined that gang.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, briefly. Like, we were fighting people all the time. Like, they needed members, and they were like, yeah, okay. Let Paul run with us. And then,
let's suspend our allergy.
Yeah, they basically invited me in, regardless of the condition I was in. And then we would get into fights, and I was like the first one to swing.
Wow.
And the thing is, I would be so afraid. Like, I'd show up to a fight, and I'm like, I don't want to hurt anyone.
Yeah.
And then you know that feeling you get, like, when the cop pulls you over?
Yes. Yeah,
Francisco?
Yeah. Like, yeah. No, that's the only thing I know.
What's that like, guys? What's it like?
But bro, you've been, like, you know that feeling? Like, you know, your heart drops out of your chest. You're like, fuck. Yeah. Every time a cop pulls me over, I'm like, I have coke.
Yeah.
For some reason. So I get that. So I had that feeling of, like, my heart just dropping. Mm-hmm. And then I would just push through and just punch someone.
Mm-hmm.
And I would just like, and then I eventually developed this like fearless mentality of like, I will fight anyone and I don't give a fuck.
So you were the trigger happy guy out of your group. You were the first one that just went.
You were Sonny.
That's how Sonny's character was, right?
Yeah,
and Godfather.
Quick and like just fucking, that's why he wasn't good at a good Godfather because he was just too crazy.
Yeah, temperamental.
Yeah, and like me, a lot of it was rooted in I wanted to prove to them. It was about acceptance.
Oh, right.
So I was like, even though I did not want to do it and I didn't know this person, I didn't know why we were fighting them, I would do it so they would like me.
Mm.
Wow.
Right? Yeah. So then I started to, eventually things got wild and I remember one of the guys was like, yo, dude, we're about to jump this one kid. Are you coming? And the reason why I didn't go is because I had another jumping.
Okay. Wait, you were in two gangs?
I got a busy schedule, man.
You were in two gangs?
There was another crew who was like, Paul will fight anybody. So they're like, yo, dude, we're about to fight these other kids. Uh-huh. And they were just kids I was friends with. And they're like, they were like, we're just going to fight this other kid.
Yeah.
And then the gang I was with was like, we're going to fight someone. I was like, well, I already committed.
Yeah. It's like, hey, I got a 2:00 beat. Yeah. You know, if I could, why?
Yeah.
Wow.
And then I was just like, double up my fight.
Yeah. Tonight. So what happened? You didn't go, and then the other guys got.
Didn't go to either one. I was just like, bro, what am I doing? I'm just going to fucking. And also, it's like I saw like my mom was like, you know.
Being overbooked made you really think hard. About, like, is this the career for me?
I was like, I could do it on Zoom.
Wow.
I can Skype myself in.
That's so wild that you were the trigger happy guy, because I was the tall guy in my group of friends, and I wasn't
in your gang?
I wasn't a gang, but I wasn't much of a fighter. But Halifax is a tough town. It's a military city. It's pretty fighty. You know, remember Darren Rose was on our podcast.
That's right.
Told us about, you know, getting his cheeks broken.
Yeah.
But as the tall guy in my little group of friends, the trigger happy guy in a rival group would always go for the tall guy, and I was just the gormless, goofy looking.
Oh.
I was not the fighter.
Yeah, the shaggy.
But yeah, my friends who were the fighters were always like, I was like the bait.
Yeah,
the tall, goofy, lumbering guy with the weird smile. And then, so I'd always get
attacked. You were like the decoy.
I'd get attacked first. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. So, yeah, you were basically Joe Pesci.
Yeah. But Joe Pesci also was like, he did it for respect. He goes, you're going to fear me.
Mm-hmm.
Me, I was like, I want you to like me.
Yeah.
I didn't really care much for fear or being revered.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I just was like, just think I'm cool, please.
Mm-hmm. You wanted to belong.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this is why you became a comic?
In a lot of ways, bro. Like it was crazy. I would listen to my comedy, and like I'm saying material that just has so much hints of like me, please.
Yeah.
Early on, especially, you know, obviously.
Yeah, because I remember one of his early bits was like, hey guys, come on, like me. Guys, just laugh. Come on, just like me.
Please.
No punchline. No, yeah. It was 5 minutes of that.
Yeah. I got a record deal.
Right. Have any of your gigs?
The name of the album is Like Me.
Yeah.
Have any of your gigs ever gotten a bit fighty?
Which one?
Like any of your shows? Like, have you had like a heckler that's escalated into like, let's take it outside, man?
No, bro. Honestly, all my once I started really dispel the whole like me from my persona,
mm-hmm.
a lot of anger and a lot
it's
of
gone.
Other things just
it went away.
Right.
Went away.
Yeah, because I met in you for a while. I never even realized you were like a fighter guy or like a gang guy. You know what I mean? Like, I've never thought. Because you never came across to me as like an angry guy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So like, it definitely has
changed. Because he just didn't find you threatening.
Yeah. Whoa. Oh, shit. Yeah, bro. I was looking at Francisco like, this fucking
I'm not worried
happy
about
guy.
No, but it's true. I never, so you obviously, that was good that you don't have that anymore. You know what I mean? Because yeah, like it's not with you, because it'd be suck if you had that with you all the time.
Yeah, it's not a funny part of a comedian's personality either. If you're always trigger happy
and like, want to fight people. And then, so did you start comedy in Detroit?
I did one show in Detroit.
Okay.
And then How'd it go?
How many sneezes did you get?
Bro, the first show I ever did in my life, right, was in the MGM casino in Detroit. And it was a 2,500 seat venue. And I've never did stand-up.
That was the first show you did?
First show.
For a 2,500? Wow.
That's a bit of the deep end.
Yeah, you know Sean Majumder.
Sean's from Newfoundland.
Yeah, he's the one who booked me on the show.
Oh, right on.
But that was did you do open mics or anything? Or that
none.
Was, this was just the first ever?
First ever. Oh, first ever talking on a microphone
in
front of a crowd.
Wow.
In my life.
You do really like to get beat up.
Oh my God, bro. It was wild, man. Like I just
How did Sean Majumder decide to put you on in that kind of circumstance?
He was about to beat him up.
I'll get you on stage.
or I'll sneeze your ass. That's a very, like, by the way, very Dick Tracy, like, villain. Like, you're the sneeze. You know, sneezes. You know, like, if you're a gang, you're like, sneezes. And you're like, hey, Dick.
Oh, yeah. You know? It's like that guy two times and says, oh, get the papers.
Yeah, get the papers. Hey, this is Paul Sneeze. He's sneezing all the time. Hey, what's up?
This is Al Urgy. Hey, Al Urgy. Yeah.
So how do you put you in the show?
So I was working on a TV show in Detroit, and Sean was on the show as one of the main actors on the show. That's how I basically got into show business. I was working as a stand-in for Michael Imperioli from The Sopranos. The guy
that
played
Chris. Really?
Oh,
yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
that's so funny.
It's actually happened. Right. Oh, okay.
Oh, so, hey, you see, this is, he planted this seed, and then he brought it back. Yeah. Smart podcast guy.
Yeah, I've done podcasts before.
but is he your same height and everything?
Mm-hmm.
Wow, I thought he was taller.
Me too.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Right.
But he's a cool guy, right?
Bro, this guy,
is one of the, I would say this, he's such a gentleman.
Right? He looks really cool. Like
really
like,
cool, bro. And like the thing is, I was so eager and I wanted to learn so much.
Was it for The Sopranos or for what?
For a different show. It's called Detroit 187.
Okay.
Yeah.
That was after The Sopranos.
After Sopranos, yeah. This was back in 2010.
Got it.
So in 2010, they were shooting this TV show in Detroit, and then I was his stand-in. So I basically like...
How'd you get that gig?
I joined an extras agency in Detroit because at the time they were filming a lot in Detroit. They were filming the Transformers movie there. They filmed like a bunch of other TV shows there. Basically, Detroit had this incentive.
Atlanta is.
It became what Atlanta is.
Right, okay.
You know what I mean? And they were filming a lot of shows there. And then I was in law school at the time. Or not in law school. I was in college at the time. And I was going to go to law school. And then I dropped out of college to work on the show. And I was like, you know, I'm going to work on this show and take a semester off of school. I had one semester left of school anyway.
Yeah.
So I'm like, let me just work on this show, get some experience.
And then you go on.
Yeah. And then I started working on the show. And then Michael was such a gentleman because like as a stand-in, like I was only just supposed to stand in front of the camera and for lighting.
For blocking and everything.
And then I leave. Right. But what I would do is I would memorize his lines.
Oh, you would?
I'd memorize.
Wow, extra step.
That's
extra
so smart. Smart.
And then so they're like, all right, let's just walk through the scene. And then I would walk through and I would go up to like the other stand-ins and I'd be like, so where's the body? And I would just say the lines and things. They'd be like, the body is right there. And then I'd be like, all right, looks like we got a blah, blah, blah. And I would like say the lines and do the actions. And like at first people are like, what the fuck?
This guy is
but overall, it's probably a better approach to your job.
Yeah, bro. After like the first week, everyone was like weird and they actually told me to stop.
Yeah.
And then I was like, no, I'm not going to. Uh-huh. And then Michael like started to like it and he would watch and he'd be like, man, this guy's getting better. And then after a few months, he was like, dude, good job. Like we did an interrogation
I liked
scene.
Your choices, man.
Straight up.
Yeah.
And then he would.
You never taken acting at that point before.
I did take a acting class, but it was not like this.
Yeah.
It was like Detroit, a guy who was like, hey guys, I was in 8 music videos as an extra and I'm teaching a class and everyone's like, this guy is next to JC.
Yeah. He's like, you see me? That's my shoulder.
Yeah. Man. And he has like headshots of his shoulder on the wall. It's like diplomas. Hey,
is this a big pimp in me? Yeah, that was me.
Crazy.
So that was very smart that you did that. And then
we were going to try to get to how he got on stage for the show.
Yeah. So Michael was an actor on the show. And then, Sean was. So Sean was playing one of the cops. So Sean was like, yo, bro, we're doing this big benefit show in Detroit. It's called Mittens for Detroit. And we're going to do this big comedy show. And I was like, well, Sean, I do comedy, man. Like, can I go up and do a few minutes?
You bullshitted.
You lied.
Yeah, I lied to him. And I was
but
like,
why did you lie? But, okay, I get it lying about getting something. But why did you lie about stand-up if you never even done it? Or did you ever like to do it?
I just wanted to do it. Okay. And I figured if I lie to him and tell him I've done it before, he'd be more inclined to say yes. Because I really just wanted
to do
it.
That is so fearless, dude. First spot in front of 2,500 people. And you've lied to your peers.
Yeah.
I'm a piece of shit.
Yeah, you are, bro. You are like, I'm trying to find the good thing about it. I'm like, nah, you're just a piece of shit, man. You fucking beat people. You fucking join a gang. Then you lie. Then you start doing fucking lines while people are doing blocking. Fucking shut the fuck up, man.
It's like, and it's getting them further and further in life.
And then you open people's mail. It's not even
you open people's mail. You're doing fucking shows when people want to go to sleep. Hey, you're perfect for this industry. Welcome to Hollywood. Yeah.
Man, I hope we put this on TikTok.
Hey, with me.
How and the gig so went? The gig happened. Was fine. The gig went fine.
Of course, no, it cannot be. Well, no, usually, you know what? My experience of what I've heard.
The bigger
people,
audience?
No, like usually the first one, if it's like, if you're meant to happen and you have like beginner's luck and it goes well or it goes okay, and then the next one is when you really bomb.
Yeah, but Sean Majunder probably brought him on going, this guy's been doing it for years.
Yeah, but nobody knows that. So what happened?
Man.
How long did you have to do, by the way?
He asked me to do 7. I got off at 4.
Okay, that's not a good sign.
Yeah.
So what happened? Did it go well or no?
But it did not go well.
But it wasn't straight silence.
It wasn't straight silence. Okay. It was like every time I said a punchline, like I heard like, it was like, it was like imagine 2,500 people just collectively like,
yeah.
It was a lot of those. And then I eventually got like one big laugh because I just addressed the reality of what was happening.
That's good.
Right.
Yeah.
And then I got like a big laugh and I was like, oh, so this is what laughter sounds like. Mm-hmm. And it like almost pushed me back.
Ah. The wall of wind when you're in those big theaters is great, isn't it?
Yeah.
This is what when you feel that, you're like, oh, fuck, this is what it's supposed to feel like. Wow. This is good.
Yeah. So then when I had that, I had this moment of like, I'm doing it. Then I said the next joke, and then it was like, it was like back to that.
Yeah. So it's basically like when you're having sex, you know, with somebody, and you're like, you make a good move, and you're like, and you get the person's reaction, like, and you're like, ooh, I'm doing it. And then you go back, and you're like, nah, nothing
happened. Yeah, it was nothing. Because you realize it was just something else that, like, they were like, oh,
yeah.
You're thinking about something.
The magical combination keeps changing.
Wow. So then after that, you're like, I'm moving to Hollywood.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. I moved to. Is this LA.
Because, so after that, you're like, I want to do stand-up because of that show?
Not stand-up, but I was like, I'm going to act and
got it.
LA.
You wanted to become an actor.
Yeah.
Michael Imperioli.
Yeah.
So did you get in contact with him when you moved here?
Yeah. I mean, I was messaging him, and a lot of people on the show were very helpful. They were like, introduced me to people.
Cool.
And
that's cool.
One of the camera women on the show lived in LA, and she was like, I'm doing another shoot in Atlanta. You can live in my apartment, my house for free for 9 months. So I had a free place to live for 9 months.
That's a great start.
She wanted you to do something else or what?
Bro, just take care of her cat.
Oh, really?
And fuck her cat.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. You know what he's like.
Right? You guys had to do that too, right? Or is that...
Hey, okay, now I know. Did you go like, hey, but I'm allergic to cats?
Yeah, then I sneezed and it triggered me.
Wow. So then you came here and then you start acting. You know?
Yeah.
So and you then never wanted to do, you did stand up, but like that wasn't your.
Yeah, point. So was stand up still something that you kind of stumble into then in your time here?
Yeah,
were you just restless or something? And
man, I was restless as fuck, bro, because I was just like, this is fucking dumb. I was like, LA is just because I ended up getting representation like the first month and a half.
Wow,
I got reps and I got booked on jobs.
Wow,
like within the first like. The first four months, I worked on a movie already.
That's like, you're like the exception.
Bro, I was the exception. And then it was like right when I moved here, I signed with like a big management company that represented like all A-listers. Uh-huh. Well, not all, I would say several.
Uh-huh.
And then I was also on the roster. And the guy only represented 20 people.
Wow.
And it was like a big management company.
That's awesome.
He doesn't mind if I say it. It was Medavoy Management, which is also the truth. His name is Brian Medavoy.
Okay.
Right? So I'm with this company. And then I got on this, I did this play, and then the play got a bunch of great reviews.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of, the creator of the play was a big EP, and it was an EP of a bunch of shows. He was working on Justified, worked on a bunch of shows with Stars.
Yeah.
And like, he was a big player in the game, you know what I'm saying? Very respected guy. Yeah. So I started to get a lot of heat, and people started to know me. And then after the play was over, and then I started to book a few jobs, and then I was like just sitting at home doing nothing. Mm. I was just going to the gym, and then I'd go to the gym, then I'd come home, and then I'd submit myself for projects like incessantly, and then
nothing was happening.
And then I'm like doing that again every day. And then I'm like, dude, this is Groundhog's Day.
Yeah.
Right.
So then I'm like, I'm not even enjoying LA. And also I didn't really have it in me to want to enjoy LA. Cause I was like, bro, I'm here to be a movie star.
Mm.
That was basically my mentality.
Yeah.
And then I just started to
not enjoy even being here
at all.
Right.
At all. And then that's why I was like, man, I want to do stand up. I had all this creativity I want to just get out.
Yeah.
So then I did a open mic at the Haha, and then Sean Kerrigan was hosting.
Uh-huh.
And then I just started doing comedy every day after that. And then stand up every single day for years.
Nice.
And then I just kept going and kept going and kept doing stand-up. And then eventually I didn't even like think about acting or auditions.
Yeah.
I'm like, bro, if they come, great. In the meantime, I'm just going to do stand-up.
Which is so cool because it's very hard. I mean, I basically was the same thing too. Like just like, I find it very hard to be an actor. Like when you don't have, like we have stand-up. We can do stuff. We can go shows. We can write. You know, we can. There's something else going that we can control.
Well, you're your own boss, right? Yeah, you're your own. Your own influence.
Like, what do you do? Yeah, you just wait around. I mean, like, unless you're doing other stuff, but like, it's very hard to have that mentality of like, because at least with us, we're still being creative.
It helps a lot to be in control of something.
Yeah.
You know, have some sort of control.
Yeah. And then, but when you moved here, did you move by yourself?
Yeah.
You did? Did you drive or flew? Or
dude, whatever? The first time I got on a plane in my life was to come to LA.
Wait, what? Really? Really? Yeah. You've never been out of Detroit ever?
I mean, I went to Chicago once.
Right.
But like driving?
No, I flew.
Oh, okay.
So No. I drove to Chicago because it's close.
Yeah.
But the first time I ever got on an airplane was to come to California.
Wow.
When I was...
Big trip. The big trip.
Yeah, 22, 23.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. That's crazy. I always find... I mean, not this because I don't know. I assume people fly all the time, but a lot of people, when they go like, yeah, I flew the first time when I was older, I was like, oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
So and then did you didn't know anybody here? You just moved by yourself?
No, I knew some of the people from the show.
Oh, got it.
And then I started like I met a lot of people through the play that I did. Like I did this play and I knew a bunch of people, and then you know, I had a circle of friends. Some of them I'm still close with today.
Yeah,
very cool. Very cool.
Not Michael Imperioli.
We email sometimes, you know, I check in and he checks in and, you know, we say what up. Okay. Great guy, man. Yeah, man.
Yeah, he's a cool guy.
Seems it.
Yeah.
I'm jealous.
Yeah, you should be.
There we go. Well, you even said that in a threatening manner. You should be.
We're almost at the time, so I think we gotta...
Oh, right on.
Dude, well, why? We do have a why couple... can't this be a three-hour episode?
Paul, the comedy star.
Yeah. People are back. Who's
also
Francisco?
Like, I like short podcasts.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, what else? I mean, you can come back.
Yeah.
And we have another episode.
JJ, right? Francisco, and Paul.
Yeah.
Paul, yeah. JJ, and Francisco.
Yeah. See? It takes a while to figure out.
It should be called
what...
Paul Standby. With JJ and Francisco.
Oh, right. Sneezes.
Sneeze by.
Sneeze by.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we'll change the plane to a coronavirus.
By the way, do you, well, quick, one question that I wanted to ask the stuff that we had. Are you superstitious in any way in terms of like when you travel or even for stand up or shows? Do you wear like a shirt or do you tap something in case, you know, or do you pray or do something, you know?
I used to be very superstitious.
Okay.
Of things. Because I used to always like, because I wanted something to go well. And then if my mind tells me it won't go well unless you do this, I would do that thing.
Got it.
Right.
Yeah. I was
so
doing
what,
that a lot.
Like what? Example.
I was doing that with I had a leather jacket.
There we go.
I remember
clothing.
You wearing
clothing
a leather
thing.
Jacket.
Do you remember?
Yeah. Even at the gym. I was like, I remember bumping into him. I was like, okay.
Leave
the jacket.
You won't let this go.
Yeah, yeah, like, what are you doing in this sauna?
Comfort jacket.
Yeah, in the pool, he was wearing the jacket.
Yeah, dude, bro. I remember I wore that jacket so much that, like, the inside material started to, like, just disappear.
Right.
Shit.
Yeah. It was like, yeah, man.
But you were having great gigs, though, weren't you? You having great gigs in it?
Dude, I think I bombed once in it, and it was because I was like, it was me, not the jacket.
Right.
Yeah. But it's just funny, like, because I had that thing too, you know, when I started. It's like, and then you realize, so dumb. Like, to think, like, I have to wear this to have a good set, or I have to wear this, you know, like.
Yeah.
Wait, you're still wearing the jacket? I feel like.
I have the jacket outside.
I feel like he's like, no, I still do it. Yeah,
no, well. It's important.
Well, you, because you bring up a good point, because it's like. I think the more
it's insecurity.
I'm just like, yeah, it's insecurity. I'm like, bro, like I've been doing this for, you know, over a decade, and it's like I'm good enough to where it's like I don't even think about that anymore. Where it's like something can go wrong.
Of course, yeah.
Like it's so interesting. It's like the mentality I have now when I approach a show. Like I did a show last year. Hassan Minhaj was doing the Fox Theater in Detroit,
mm-hmm.
and it was 5,000
Oh, nice.
5,000 seats. And Hassan,
oh, you were gonna get your revenge, your comeback tour.
Yeah, it's my comeback tour, right? And then I'm like, I'm sitting in the back, and it's like, you know, it's like 4,000 people in there, and like people are like walking in at the same time. And honestly, I was just like talking to one of the stage guys before I went on stage. I was like, oh, we're about to go up. All right, cool.
Yeah.
Then I went up and I did it. And then I went in the back and I watched, and I wasn't thinking. And then till later, I was just like, oh shit, like it's interesting to think about. Like, I didn't even think once about
who's
there, or who's watching, or what's happening, and then, or what am I
just
wearing.
You just outgrew those comfort crutches. Just
well,
like
the guy did tell him, like, hey, you forgot your jacket.
They didn't give me the light. They gave me the jacket.
Yeah. I used to not want to eat. Like an hour and a half before.
Like that,
and now lately I've noticed I'm like eating while I'm on my way to the stage. Just get it
in. Well, I remember, it's just, I remember even like, because also when you first start, you don't realize how, I mean, it is very hard. So it's like, you see, I remember even being working here at the door and seeing guys, comic, you know, they're talking in the hallway and then like, talking normal, like we're talking, and then all of a sudden, oh, just go up. And I'd be like, are you? It's like, what? You're not even, you know, like having a moment for yourself and doing all this stuff. Yeah. And it's like, no, when you do, and that's anything, because even acting, when I was doing this show, you know, Angie Tribeca, I remember like, we're doing it like the with the actors, and like, we're just talking, like they were just talking, like, oh, I like your shoes, whatever, action. And then you start, boom, like right away.
Yeah.
Like they're not, you know, and I get it. There's certain times where you do need to have a little more concentration. You're going to tape something, or it's a scene that's heavy scene that you need, you know, of course you do. But for most of the time, it's like, you know, we don't, it's all in our minds, you know what I mean? And we make that, I have to wear this, or I have to tap thing or whatever, but it's like, it's bullshit, you know?
Yeah, there was actually a comic who was about to do a show, and they had on some like studio Dr. Dre headphones, Beat headphones, and they're like in the back, like.
Right. Eminem, they're like doing the
straight up on some Eminem, and then they're about to go up. They took off the headphones, and then the dude was like, "Ha!" Like he's about a fucking deadlift, and then he bombs for the entire set. Went on stage and like was just not making like any sense really. and also like I hate when comics say coochie. It's like, that's such an old word.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And then he was on stage. He goes, yeah. And I said, give me some coochie. The white guy. He's like, I said, give me some coochie. And then I think, I love when comics bomb. It's
just
so
getting
great.
Worse and worse.
The best is to watch a comic bomb.
Yeah, because it's the best when hearing them bomb and hearing them like say some, make sounds. Like when they bomb. Like the guy bombed. He goes, yeah, some coochie. Then he was like,
like air slowly leaving a balloon.
Dude, I heard a comic bomb at the Improv Lab, which is the Improv Lab. It's not an easy room because it exposes everything. You have nowhere to hide.
And also I feel like a lot of people go like, why didn't I get to the big room? You know, I feel like a lot of the audience.
Yeah.
So then they're like, they're already got not coming with like that much energy. So it's like that.
Oh, that's a bummer.
So it dies.
So it kind of sucks a little bit of the joy out of them.
I mean, that's just my.
And also
hypothesis.
The old setup was they didn't have a curtain.
Oh, and then you see
the bar.
Yeah.
And it just looks like you're just in a jazz club.
Yeah, this is
a good place for like some jazz.
Exactly.
You know, not comedy.
Yeah.
So this is one comic going up, and this guy was literally getting nothing, but he was so happy. Like he would say something, like he goes, and then then this happened. Man. And then the other thing, and then he went to the next thing, and then eventually he said something, and then he's like he said the punchline, he goes, then that happened. Then he's like,
happiness does not beget hilarity.
Bro, when this guy like tapped his chest and they like the smile, like he looked over, he's like, ah! And then like he like did it like randomly, and then every comic in the back
just
was like,
of course.
Like we were dying.
Nah, I remember watching this guy bomb, and he was the five stages of bombing. In the same set. It was beautiful. Right. It was like...
Denial?
It started with like the guy... Denial is like, shock. Oh, you guys not getting? Come on, man. Right. Oh, wow. You think you're too good? And then it switched to like apologizing. And, hey, guys, come on. Are you not... I mean...
Bargaining.
Then, it was just... And then...
and then depression.
And then he was just like... It was just so like, but it was like a 10-minute set, and you could see the stages going boom, boom, boom. And I was like, oh my God, this is, and I was laughing in the back because it was beautiful to watch.
Oh, that's so funny.
You know, but I was like, but it was so funny to be like, oh yeah, because especially when we, as comic, when shit, we're not even bombing. To me, it's even funny when shit doesn't even work. Like you could be having a great set, but then you try something and then you know, the little things that we do, like,
yeah.
So, you know, like, whatever. Like, it's funny to me because we're like, we only know that. We're like,
yeah.
Well, that didn't work as I thought. Anyways.
You and know. Sometimes even Questions? Saying that, like, yeah, even that could be, like, that's a tactic. Like, I saw a guy do that same thing. And, like, also, it's funny seeing that the things to try to get out of a bomb didn't work.
Yeah, yeah,
like,
yeah.
The guy said something that didn't laugh. Like no one laughed. And he tried to go to crowd work. And I remember he was like, so where are you from? And the dude was just like, nah.
Oh, no.
Oh, man.
And then he was like... Man,
I cannot use any tricks on this.
And then he eventually brought someone up on stage and was like, DJ, play us some music.
Oh, that's a terrible idea.
And then the girl was just on stage, like, she's like, what? Like, she didn't like know what was happening. He goes, play some music. And then he goes, yeah, give us a little dance.
Dance,
yeah. And then the girl like started to like dance.
Oh, my.
And then that got nothing. And then like the DJ just like, like, she, like, stopped dancing, then the DJ, like, lowered the music.
Oh, man.
But he lowered the music and his mic. And then he's like, yeah, thank you. Oh, the mic's not. Yo, am I done? And then he just, like, left. Oh,
yes, you're done. You were done before the dancing, my friend.
Those are the worst ones when you were to walk through that, back to your car after the bombing. You know what I mean?
Oh my God, yeah.
Like, I mean, I feel like I only bombed like one time that was like I was like, all right, like early on at the whole haha.
Oh.
And I remember like just going back, you know, like, cause it's funny, as soon as you get off a stage, you kind of look at the other comics just to see, cause if you want somebody to go like, hey, it wasn't that bad. But the thing that's comedy, you know, they don't, as we all know, nobody says anything, but they all treat you like you got leprosy, so they don't even want to look at you. They're like,
yeah.
And then
yeah.
You're like, yeah. And you just like slowly.
Talk about superstition. We're going to catch it. Yeah. Okay.
Have y'all ever seen a comic bomb, and then when they get off stage, they try to dap you up? Like they basically leave, and they're basically, it's almost like, I don't know if they're dapping me up to say, like, hey, I'm just walking past you. Because sometimes a comic will walk past. Like, if I'm at a comedy club and Francisco walks past me, and, like, I already said what up to him, and, like, we talked, and then if I run into him again, I'm going to, like, touch him.
Right.
Or dap him up in some way.
Yeah, yeah,
and be like, yo, what up? You're something, I guess, right? It's like that happens at the store a lot, because you'll see someone, you just had a conversation, and you go somewhere else, and then they walk in the hallway, and sometimes you just say what up, right? It happens. So it's like, there's also that, but, like, when a comic is leaving the stage and tries to dap me up, I made a promise to myself. It was like my New Year's resolution in 2018. I was like, I'm not going to lie to anybody. And that is a form of lying to me.
Oh,
to
really?
Dap someone up and they bomb. And I'm like, I'm not going to do that. So I've left people hanging before.
Oh, really? But why didn't you just dap it and be like, that was bad?
You know? Yeah, you can still be honest. Yeah.
No, because like, they'll do that and I'll just like... And I'll just like shoulder them.
Mm-hmm. Oh God! Remember not to walk towards you after a bad gig.
Yeah,
that sucked.
I'm a good friend.
I just need friendship. I need some friendship now. And you're like, nah, man.
Arguably, I think I'm being a better friend by doing that. Because then if someone were like, what happened? I could probably articulate exactly what happened. But I don't think anyone wants to have that conversation.
Yeah.
Right.
And I'd be like, yeah, dude, material just, you know, very rarely have I seen a comic with great material do bad.
Mm. Yeah.
It's like if they do awesome material and the crowd is not into it, they'll find a way to make it fun.
Yeah, I mean, I think when you get to a point where even if a comic is not doing well with the crowd, they're still you get to a point where like they still do good. You know what I mean? And like, and it's just fun. I mean, and it's, sometimes I see people that they're, you know, you could tell they're good at comedy, even if they're not getting laughs, because you could just tell how like they're comfortable with it. It's like, oh, this is not working, whatever, you know.
Yeah,
it's just
yeah.
when you're new. And you don't know what to do. That's the true bombing, I guess.
Yeah.
It's a combination of like, you don't know what to do, and maybe the crowd wasn't as good at it, you know, and that's where. But when you're already done it for a while, everybody, we all know how to like kind of get away with
Dig
it.
Dig yourself
yeah.
out.
Yeah. Well.
Yeah, I guess we got to wrap it. Man, you've been an amazing guest. We do have one last question, which since this is a travel podcast, but it's been great.
We're talking about the travel of his life.
Yeah,
yeah,
of course. And first time on a plane was to come to L.A.
Yes,
so
yeah.
But we'd love to ask, do you have a favorite piece of travel advice that you'd love to hand down to people? I mean,
unless you just travel, this is your only travel was once to L.A.
Yeah,
I've never traveled
it.
Before.
And best travel advice is pack light.
Pack light.
Yeah. You can buy it when you get there.
Pack light, why? Because you're gonna get in a fight with your gang member.
There's roaming gangs looking to steal shit from you, yeah. So pack light.
I just think it's so many people just overpack.
And I'm
it's
one like, of those.
And it's like, bro, just if you, it depends on how many days you're going for. Like, I would assume that if you're leaving for like between 1 to 6 days, mm-hmm. a carry-on and a backpack is enough.
Totally.
I mean, well, oh, but for us as comedians or performers, sometimes you gotta, if you want to sell merch, you gotta, you know, check a bag or something.
Right. Yeah. That's
so
true.
That's,
well, yeah,
I
mean, merch
for the
is
average
tough.
Person, I guess. Yeah, I guess with the exception of merchandise and job, my advice is pack light.
Yeah, that is true. I think that's a good amount. Like, I think it's after a week or a week, I think you gotta check a small. I think to me, I would check a bag.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Because yeah. that's like a lot of time. I'm like, I don't want to be, you know, that's a little.
Yeah, 7 days worth of clothing is a good
right,
cut off.
A good of checking a bag. But yeah. If it's like 5 days, you know, like, yeah, carry on. I agree with that. Because you're wearing, we're always wearing the same thing anyways, no matter what. You know what I mean?
Also, it's like just such a pain, bro, to like drag this large suitcase. Yeah, and like, sometimes I'm so
tired.
Or to
tired, wait for it to show up at the airport. Yeah, waiting for your checked bag to show up.
Yeah, like in Orlando, like when I got there, I landed. I had to wait an hour and a half for the bags to come out because there was thunderstorms, you know, thunder. So they couldn't, like the people can't, you know. But yeah, even that. Yeah. I had to wait. I could have just left earlier, you know what I mean? So yeah, man.
Yeah,
so pack light, and,
pack light.
And sneeze tight.
Sneeze tight, pack light. Yeah, man.
All right, man. Well, hey, so quickly before you leave, if you can, do you have any shows coming up that you want to, this is going to come out pretty soon, I think tomorrow.
Yeah.
Or, oh, tomorrow?
Friday. No.
Friday, I think.
Yeah.
Friday? Yeah. So if you go to.
You can look at the camera.
Yeah. Go to at Paul Alia on Instagram, and I got a show at the Comedy Store October 4th. I got Cobb's Comedy Club October 6th, and I got a bunch of other shows coming up in L.A. and in Detroit December 8th and a bunch of other cities. So just go on my Instagram, my link tree. Everything's on there.
Well, what is it?
At Paul Alia on Instagram.
Cool.
And on TikTok, too.
Awesome. I thought your Instagram was just Michael Imperioli.
Too many letters. Someone else took it.
Well, for us, thank you for coming. I am performing October 1st, LA here, you know, co-headlining with Carlos Santos. Check that out on my Instagram. Also, I'm going to be in Vegas October 3rd to the 9th. I'm actually headlining the first time there.
Nice.
3rd and 4th.
Brad Garrett's
Comedy
Nicely
Club.
Nicely done, man.
And then I'm doing also Escondido, California, November 11th and 12th. And what about you?
Sweet.
Are you going to New York?
Going to New York next week. This weekend, I'm opening for Jim Jefferies in Seattle and Portland. So if you like Jim Jefferies, come down and see me tell some jokes before he smashes the shit out of it for an hour and a half. Boy, does 90-minute shows, man.
Wow.
And then next week, I'm at Caroline's on Broadway in New York. So if you like my shtick, please come out there.
Well, thank you very much. Thanks, Paul, for coming. Thank you for joining the podcast or for being in the podcast. We appreciate it. Thank you,
thanks,
buddy.
Man.
And remember to subscribe, you know, write comments.
Click things.
Listen.
Ask us questions.
Subscribe in iTunes so we can get up the chart.
Yeah.
In YouTube, you know, all this stuff.
Yeah, we love that, too. We haven't been reading things, like, on air when we've been having our guests, especially when we have great guests who, you know, we just riff back and forth and back and forth. But we would love you guys to send in your stories or questions, and then we'll start throwing them to guests.
Exactly.
Yeah. Don't hoard your likes. Just fucking like it.
Just like it. Yeah, just like it.
Yeah.
Just like everything. All right. Thank you. Bye, Alou.